This is the WOKV Spotlight on 104.5 WOKV.
We're spotlighting a story that has been in the news nearly 2 weeks now, and still a lot of answers have not come to bear. The still unexplained death of a 31-year-old father at the Duval County Jail just 2 weeks ago, nearly. A searing reminder of the perils that lurk within the decades-old building. Jacksonville's jail is a dangerous place, and often not because of its inmates. That from the Tributary's Nicole Manna. The Tributary, if you don't yet follow, is a nonprofit newsroom here in Jacksonville producing impact stories about government accountability and investigative journalism in the public interest. And we wanted to bring in Nicole to talk a little bit more, not just about the ongoing investigation into the death of Charles Faggart, but the longer issues and investigation that the Tributary has done for in recent years. Nicole, thanks for coming in studio. And as we look back through the weekend, has there been any new news on the death of Charles Faggart as of this point?
No, right now, still no new news. Still very unclear what exactly happened to him in the jail. We know some minor details from a heavily redacted police report that was sent to us, I believe, last week. Yep. We know that there was some kind of struggle between him and correctional officers. We know that he was restrained in a chair for about 2 hours. And we know at some points a nurse washed saline solution in his eyes, which indicates he was probably pepper sprayed at some point as well.
We also know that the state attorney's office is part of the investigation, as is JSO, as is the FBI. Is there any clarity about the role of the FBI yet?
No, not really. So when you have an incident in the jail, when you have somebody who dies for any reason, the state attorney's office often goes in to kind of do that third party investigation. And then in high profile deaths such as this, we usually get a pretty detailed, report after the investigation is finished. As far as I know, that is still happening by the state attorney's office. We're not really sure exactly what the FBI is doing. We just know that Sheriff T.K. Waters did call them in.
The 8 corrections officers and 1 corrections sergeant have been stripped of their current duties as a result of the investigation. We do know their names, but we don't yet know, again, the roles that they played because of the heavy redaction in that incident report. Is that still the same case that you're seeing?
Yes. Yeah. There was no indication in the report of who was doing what, when. So still unclear why so many people were involved in this and how.
We have documented here on WOKV Radio along the way over the last several years the changes in both health care and other issues related to deaths in the jail. Your reporting found that since 2010, more than 145 people have died inside the Duval County Jail. The trouble's not necessarily secret, but and everyone is different, but what have you found as your investigation has been ongoing for multiple years now?
Yeah, the biggest point that we found was that the sheriff's office actually privatized their medical care in 2017, meaning that before that, I think it was about a 4-year period, JSO was doing their medical care in-house. They then privatized to a company called Armor Correctional Healthcare. So from 2017 to really last year, deaths actually tripled after that contract was signed. And as a result, Sheriff Waters ended that contract, signed a new, more expensive one, and hired about 14 new medical staff.
Since that's happened, what have we seen? Have the numbers changed in any way as you've tracked?
Yeah, so we were just able to track year to year because it's just been a year, maybe at this point, a year and a half since the contractors changed. So we did see last year that there was a 50% drop in the deaths. And I talked to some experts who said, it's really hard to say if that means that, we're over the worst of it or what's going to happen this year. There just hasn't been enough time to really determine if a major change has happened.
Have you been able to determine or investigate the circumstances under the previous contractor? What may have led to such a sharp jump in jail deaths?
Yeah, that was something that we were working on probably a year and a half ago. And we saw a policy within Armor where they weren't necessarily taking people to the hospital as quickly as they may have, should have. And we also know now that there's actually no full infirmary in the jail. So there's a lot of things that medical staff at the facility can't do, which is why we have so many people who are transported for medical care to UF Health.
So what kind of things would they need to have in order to not have to transport then?
They would have to have more beds in their infirmary. I believe right now they have 3 or 4. They would have to be able to do IV access. So right now, if you're arrested and you're dehydrated or you're detoxing and you need IV, you have to be taken to the jail. So even, or you have to be taken to the hospital. So even small interventions like that can't really be handled at the facility right now.
And are there a lot of incarcerations before pretrial that would involve that sort of thing? I'm thinking of all the people who get arrested for drugs and whether it's possession, drinking and driving, DUIs, and those kinds of things. Are those the most common cases where an individual is taken out of the jail for treatment?
Yeah, it could be that kind of treatment. It could be dialysis. When NAFCARE took over the contract, one of their representatives said at a city council meeting that they have inmates who often have to have dialysis or treatments like that where they also have to be taken to the hospital. And U of Health did a report that we wrote about last year about the amount of people that are transferred to the hospital. And I think we spend about $10 million sending folks from the jail to the hospital every year. But I don't know exactly how many people we are sending over there. Mm.
So what are some of the lingering questions in both Charles Faggart's case and then as your reporting is happening? And again, we're talking with Nicole Manna from the Tributary Independent Newsroom here in Jacksonville. How does that coincide, I guess, with the understanding of the new provider of medical care, resources available at the jail? And obviously, this might be illuminating and maybe a key inflection point, if you will, for the level of care for inmates at the correctional facility.
Yeah, as it stands right now with the type of care we have, it doesn't seem like what happened with Charles Faggart, like he would have even been able to get treatment at the jail. And I don't even know if that would have been a possibility if we had a full infirmary. Just because we don't know the extent of his injuries and what happened. So a big question that I have is exactly what led up to this happening. How long was he in the restraint chair? What was happening while he was in the chair? Was he actually pepper sprayed? If so, how many times? Those are kind of our big questions right now. Mm-hmm.
I would think that every time there's an inmate who dies in jail, there likely is legal action that comes. Has the city faced, given the 145 deaths over since 2010, is that 145 law? I mean, does every family file a suit?
Not every family. A lot of deaths can be tied to natural causes and pre-existing conditions before somebody was arrested. So a lot of medical conditions that way. But we did report on a lawsuit that happened a few months ago at the end of the year where a woman died by suicide. And she filed a lawsuit against the jail, some of the nursing staff, and I think was settled for about $200,000. That was the family of the woman who died by suicide. And we're sure that there's going to be a lawsuit to follow with Mr. Faggart's death.
I wonder how many of the more than 145 people since 2010, how many were ruled suicide? Do you know?
Not off the top of my head. It is in our story, but I wasn't the reporter who wrote that. I believe in the time frame we looked at, there were 8 to 10 people. But that was a story we reported in January, I believe. So it's on our website somewhere.
Yeah, it is. There have been rallies. There's a fair amount of attention, obviously, on the long-term vision for a new jail as well. But the reality is you're not going to be able to pick up and move the jail anytime soon. So is there much in the way of effort following Charles Faggart's death and maybe following the reporting by the Tributary to bring in the infirmary resources and add to the amount of care that is offered in the Duval County Jail?
Yeah, so in the last year, the sheriff has added, I believe, 14 medical staff. And as we know, we've been talking about, you know, moving the jail and building a newer facility for the last couple of years. And so that conversation has been brought up with this as well. And with the sheriff's office being moved out of the police memorial building, there's been a question about why can we not build a full infirmary in the police memorial building. I know that was a question that came up last year. And so right now people are just kind of debating whether or not it is a new facility that we need.
And Nicole, based on your investigation of the Charles Faggart story, do you think that this is something that's likely to go on for months and months and months of investigation? Or are we expecting to get an update even with FBI investigation sooner than that?
See, with the FBI being involved, we have wondered if we are going to get updates as quickly as we normally would have. As we know, the FBI doesn't really like to give out information about investigations that they're doing, which is why we're questioning and wondering exactly what their role is. So it's really, really hard to tell when we're going to know more. I know with federal lawsuits, I believe the cap is 2 years. You have to have a civil lawsuit filed within 2 years. So I'm sure his family is going to be pushing to get that information before that deadline.
One of the challenges is, as a sheriff who uses the word transparency a lot, there has been not a lot of transparency so far with this investigation, even the redaction of names and the like. But it's such a delicate thing when you're dealing with a number of corrections officers and their rights, obviously, and then also the status of an ongoing investigation. How has the sheriff so far been navigating publicly releasing information while at the same time honoring, if you will, the spirit of an investigation?
Yeah, I mean, he says that he's being as transparent as he can. I know Mr. Faggart's family has taken a lot of issue with that, saying that they don't believe he's being transparent. And their attorney has said that all of the information they have, they've received at the same time as the public. When Sheriff Waters did the initial press conference saying that an incident had happened, according to the family attorney, Mr. Faggart's family had no idea that he was even in the hospital. They were called about an hour before by a sergeant, according to them, who just said, need to watch TV.
So obviously this week is just beginning. There might be some developments that come along the way. We'll obviously look for those and listen for those. And if you don't follow the Tributary, is a nonprofit newsroom that is all about government accountability, investigative journalism, public interest, and based in Jacksonville. Nicole Mano, one of the staff reporters, and it's a mighty team, a small team in numbers,
yes.
As we feel that way with local news sometimes.
Yeah, but we're small but mighty.
Yeah,
we're
indeed.
Getting the work done.
It's great reporting, and I appreciate you coming in to unpack a lot of this morning. Thank you. It's 9:17 on the Monday edition of Jacksonville's Morning News.